It's Wednesday the 30th of January and you're listening to the Red Army Rambler. I'm your host Paul Hinton and as ever I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there gents.
Hello there Paul.
Good evening Paul.
And we're back again to look at the Devils games from the week past. Some quite juicy talking points that have come out of those games that we'll go into depth on. We'll pick a player of the week as always. We've got a couple of burning questions to discuss before we preview the upcoming weekend's games against Manchester Storm and the Sheffield Steelers. So lots to get on with. And we need to go way back to last Wednesday to get going, where the Devils travelled up to Sheffield just three nights after their second win in two nights over Belfast. The three of us made the journey up and I think we all discussed on the way up that we were nervous about being tired a bit, maybe on a bit of a come down as well after such a good weekend. But the Devils started quite well, Sean, and you know, a good first period.
Yeah, it was a decent start. I thought that we didn't really get out of second gear and still took a lead into the break, and I was a bit more at ease after the first, knowing that we probably had a bit more in the tank, but it turned out to be a little bit more cagey than that.
Yeah, two goals in the first period, one on the power play from Joey Martin and a goal from Jake Morissette. Put us 2-0 up at the end of that first period, Aaron, but Sheffield made some chances in the first, but they came out a lot faster. And do you think maybe caught the Devils a little bit unawares, or do you think that they just took advantage of the tired legs?
Yeah, no, I think we felt a little bit comfortable. You know, I think we saw the two goal gap we had, and I thought maybe the guys thought they could cruise a little bit. And you know, even a poor Steelers team is a good Steelers team in their own rink. So I think that was a silly mistake, and before you know it, that big guy that they signed recently from that team in Europe. Zagreb, that's him. John Armstrong, we all know him. We all hate him. He scores a goal, and you know then we start to worry, and then it's a lot of panic. We can't get passes together properly. Can't really get a puck out the zone. And a couple more minutes later, and Jonathan Phillips finds a nice open gap and beats bounds, and we're all tied. And then panic started to set in anymore. Yeah, even more, sorry. And it just went downhill from me. I blame myself, I do, because silly me got cocky and arrogant and put a bet on before the game that Cardiff Devils would win by more than 4.5 goals. And, you know, I think that's the cause of it, really. Whenever I put a bet on, it never goes well. So,
well, it was that and saying that Sheffield were going to score at the end of the first period.
So, yeah. You know, so. Yeah.
There was a lot of your shoulders for that one.
Yeah, I take responsibility.
As well, in that second period, there was a goal disallowed for Sheffield. John Armstrong surprisingly getting a penalty for goalie interference. Sean, what was your thoughts on it? Do you think right call to disallow it? Right call to give him the 2 minutes?
Right call to disallow it. Goaltender's not allowed the opportunity to make the save. So the correct call to disallow it. Incorrect to give John Armstrong a penalty, really, because it was just a tussle in front of the net. I think it was a bit of a kick in the teeth for Sheffield to have the goal disallowed and then go on the kill.
Do you think his reputation maybe went ahead of him a bit there in terms of the decision?
Possibly. It's difficult to say. You know, Stephen Hogarth spent a number of occasions through the evening flat on his butt, so whether he saw the incident, I do not know. And Sheffield, in fairness, it was a bad time for them to lose that because they gained momentum with the two goals. Like you said, like Aaron said, John Armstrong getting a goal, which I thought was a really, really cool finish, right along the ice through the traffic. John Phillips just gets on the end of a spilled rebound from Ben Bowes and just about tucks it in the post. I think we were lucky to get away with that, with the disallowed goal, and then to get a power play on top to break Sheffield's momentum going into the second period break was really critical for us because we weren't at our best in that period at all.
Yeah, it was just nice to have 2 minutes without the Steelers camped out in front of Ben Bounds' net on that penalty kill. Mm. Going into the third period then, I think based on like previous games, you expect in a reaction from the Devils, but Aaron, one didn't really come. And I think, you know, for me, with a bit more clinical finishing, by the time the eventual winner came from Gleeson Fournier, could have had another couple.
Yeah, I think that's where the tired legs like crept into the game. We didn't look at our best at all, and even our high energy players, you know, they looked less high energy. There was a couple of players who I don't think turned up performance wise, but you know, if they're carrying Knox and you know a couple of guys are sick, that's fair enough. There's not a lot you can do about that, but. Lane Elmer goes into the corners, wins a battle for the puck, outweights a couple of defenders and Lawton Fonts, you know, he doesn't usually miss from there, and luckily enough we managed to score a goal and held on to that lead. You know, I think that was a real test of character. You know, we needed one moment of magic. Lane Elmer gave us that, and you know, we held off long enough to get our W. It was a really, really, really gritty result from us. I think all you needed was, a moment of magic. We had that in Lane Elmer and Abbey Days. Luckily enough, because it would have been a long, long drive home if we didn't win that game.
I think Fournier was the little bit of magic in it, but the pass which Lane Elmer gives us, you're right, is sublime, as well as the battle on the boards to win the puck against Ryan Martinelli. At that stage of the game, you know, one of the oldest guys in the team shouldn't really have that much left in the tank at that stage, but just out muscles him, strips him of the puck, and like you said, the little bit of magic leaves us a journey home with points, which is always easier than going home with nothing, as we have done in any time in previous years, Paul.
Yeah, driving back from Sheffield without any points is never pleasant. And the journey, I think even with diversions, the journey went a hell of a lot quicker with those in the bag. And just mentioning Gleeson Fournier's finish, pop the water bottle, which is just something that it's always lovely to see that pop up as the goal light comes on. Devils almost got an empty netter as well through, I think, Jake Marset. But the puck was deemed to have crossed the line seconds, well, probably less than a second after the final buzzer had gone. So all in all, good performance. Lane Elmer getting assists on all three goals, and Fournier going 1+1. And you know, nice to see James Livingston picking up a couple of assists as well. He seems to be finding his feet very nicely. But Sean, you know, Aaron mentioned that bit of quality, that bit of work. For me, that was the only hope I had in the third, that we had the legs, Elmer showed them, but that quality, just Sheffield seemed to be crying out for someone who can hit the target. They had 22 shots on net, but I would probably guess they had nearly double that in, you know, chances on net.
Yeah, I think that's right. We played tired. You could just tell. It wasn't for lack of trying or lack of effort. We just didn't have any gas in us at all. Passes were going astray. We just couldn't, we weren't taking the game to Sheffield like we did in spells of the first period, and we just absolutely gasped. I think we spoke to each other during the period break after the second and just said, it's just not down to good enough or not trying. We are just out on our feet, and we are not going to grind Sheffield down to win this. We need a little bit of magic, and that's it. We just need to. We know we're a better side than Sheffield. The league table shows it. Results between us show it, and performances overall. But I think Sheffield gave us absolutely everything they had in that game, and still couldn't break us down. Purely because we, in fairness, we did collapse well when we needed to. We boxed. He made a lot of good saves, but he didn't really have a great deal of quality to deal with. But as you said, crying out for that Matthew Waugh, that goal scorer, and if they had, a totally different story on the night. We're lucky we managed to get some finishing with Gleeson Fournier at the end there, and that was ultimately the difference, is just the raw finishing and talent. Because I think we would have scored three goals from talent. Sheffield's two goals were purely work based. They threw pucks on net, worked hard to gain the zone, and we didn't do a great deal of that. We had to just be brilliant, and that's what good teams do. They win when they're not playing at their best, and that's what we managed to do.
Yep, agree. So that was Wednesday. Saturday, worth mentioning, very, very bad at doing this at the start. Devils travelled without Joe, your dad, again, and Mike Hedden. So playing, well, one import short overall, but two players out. Saturday, travel made our way back up north to Nottingham with returning to the lineup. So the Devils at a full complement of imports for the game. Just last week, how Nottingham is never a happy hunting ground for us. Well, not often. Having a point there this season. And, well, that hasn't, spoilers, that hasn't been a goalless first period. Sean, how did you think the game, the Devils shaking off that tiredness from Wednesday?
We seem to have shaken off the tiredness. We had a couple of shifts where Nottingham were all over us, and we were lucky to come out unscathed, but we did pick it up a little bit towards the end of the first. Aaron, I know you were particularly frustrated at the end of the first period with the performance, but it did get a little bit better as it went along.
Yeah, I did think we played well, but I think it was kind of the similar thing as what it was in Sheffield, like towards the end of the game, you know, tired legs, a couple of guys, you know, were kept making some mistakes, you know, they were becoming costly. And I think every time you play against, like, especially Cardiff Devils, play against the Nottingham Panthers, you're guaranteed to always start 1-0 down, because you know that Luke Pither is always going to score against you. I wasn't wrong. He did score against us. But I just think I expected more. I think I expected, like, a, you know, they did only have 2 days rest, granted. I just expected, you know, a little bit of a bounce back after the Sheffield game. You know, a couple of better shifts and stuff. And, you know, I think Panthers are, you know, the team that we can't beat. There's nothing we can do against them. We just can't beat them. They're nothing special team, but we just couldn't perform. Like, we had a couple of, well, we didn't have, there was no penalties given in the first period. It was all even. It was a bit of a scrappy game, chances both sides, but I just thought, you know, we've seen, well, like, take Belfast games the week before, we was quality for 60 minutes in both of them games, and we take the two games that we play against lesser opponents who aren't doing very well, and you know, it was almost as if we as a team play at a level that our opponents play at. And you know, I don't know if there's just better game plan or whatever, but it just didn't work for us, and took us a while to get going. But you know, what are you going to do?
Well, what we did is go a goal down 5 minutes into the second period from John Rehalt.
John Rowe.
He's got a lot of letters. He's got a lot of letters in that name that he doesn't need. He's been quite greedy. But he hasn't bothered putting an H in John, so swings and roundabouts, I suppose. So, Devils go a goal behind in Nottingham. Pither, but, you know, what's surprising, but Sean, just over a minute later, and Bent evens things up, and you know, the rest of the period, Devils outshot Nottingham almost 1 through the second period. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I thought we were very good in the second. Much, much better than the first, and unlucky not to go in the lead. And I got to be honest with you, I know the third, much the same. We create a lot of good chances, and Bryce Reddick nearly gets one to the end to tie it up, but it's not to be. And we got beaten by a hot goalie, which he isn't often against us. I did think he played very well. Nottingham raised their game for us, as they have in every game against us this year. We've not had an easy game against them. They've rolled over for other teams, and they see that for us like it's the World Cup final. It's frustrating. It's annoying. Why they do it, I have absolutely no idea. But I thought we did okay. I don't think Nottingham were anything special, like Aaron said, to deserve to take the 2 points. If anything, that had a draw all over it. We weren't fantastic. Nottingham weren't great. If they were draws in hockey, I'd have given a draw to that game based on what I saw overall. So, bit frustrating to come away from Nottingham this year with 0 points yet again, but
might be the first time in a little while we usually manage at least.
We normally get an overtime loss, or we mess it up some stage. We sometimes snag one, but
we are done with Nottingham now. But out of six games against them this year, they've taken a point in all but one of them. We've won all the home games but two after overtime. So, for a team that are struggling, it is crazy how well they've done against us this year.
Probably almost half their points, isn't it?
possibly not far off. We've glossed over the third period, so I suppose we should talk about the
incident.
The main talking point of Elite League fans on Twitter this week, other than being mean to players. I've got to be honest, I didn't see the hit live. I know that where we were at the back of block two, in line with the hit pretty much from Rislin. There was a million people screaming that it was a terrible hit, others saying it was shoulder to shoulder.
I thought it was clean.
Yeah, so it was a quick hit. Even on the replays, when it was first shown, it became on Twitter. I think people were watching it again and again and just weren't sure how it was. But, everyone's seen it now. Wrestling comes across the front of Mosey. His shoulder clearly makes contact with his face. And Mosey apparently is, knocked out on the spot. And then, to top it off, lands face first on the ice. So, Mosey's out cold. Biggest issue, obviously the biggest issue is hits to the head, but the refs allow the game to carry on far too long for a player prone on the regardless, they saw it. It wasn't like it was massively behind the play. Whether you give a penalty or not, I don't get that. So the hit happens, Wrislin just pretty much stands there. Garnett calls for a doctor as soon as possible. It's worrying scenes, Aaron, when Evan Mosey's eventually helped up, and as he's been helped off the ice, you just see his legs go.
I was literally in shock. I was stood next to Sean, and I couldn't get words out, because for me, I'm relatively new to the sport, and live hockey wise, that is probably the biggest and worst hit I've ever seen. And I was just in shock, and watching him skate off, it was such a worry, especially when he nearly fell backwards as well. It was so worrying, because he at the end of the day, on that night, Evan Mosey was one of our better players, and he put us in a position just before the hit where he was essentially one-on-one with Garnett, and if Rislin wasn't there, that's a goal. I don't care what you say. Evan Mosey's finishing there. And when you lose one of your best players on the night to a dangerous and careless hit like Rislin did, I was just absolutely in shock. I couldn't get no words out. I had people, like you said, people saying to me it was clean. People saying that they didn't see it. And I was just, honestly, it was... I was in literal shock, and I just didn't know what to say, what to do. But then my good old buddy, Lane Elmer, steps up to the plate and, does Evan Mosey and the Devils and all the fans proud, and goes out. All right, he did leave the bench, but I think if the ref, because I think Alma did try and wait to see if the ref was going to call a penalty, and because they didn't, I think he took it on him, upon himself to be like, to the refs, if you're not going to do something about it, I'll do something about it, and goes after Rizlin. All right, he held his own for a couple of minutes, and then, Rizlin, the bigger guy, the younger guy, took a bit of advantage, but all credit to Lane Alba, because at the end of the day, he's a 38-year-old man who doesn't need to be doing things like that, coming towards the end of his career, and, I think he's had total, including junior career, he's had a total of like 6 fights, and he hasn't had one since like 2009-10 season. So
that was his second professional fight.
Yeah, that's his second professional fight in his career, and you never expect a player to do it like that. And all credit to Lane Alma. I know I'm already stuff, but I thought to do that, that's special, that is, because that's where you tell that, like, because you hear a lot of rumors about like a couple of guys that are really good in the room, really good at talking and getting the guys up for games, and I've heard on more than one occasion that Alma is that kind of guy, and it just proves that, although he's older, more experienced, he still cares about his teammates and his, just a credit to him, really, because I was gutted he lost the fight, but so proud that he did do it. Like, that's what you want to see in ice hockey. Like, when your best players take a nasty hit and someone just to jump in there. Wally done it a couple of years ago when it happened to Hudson. All right. And yeah, I bet he wishes he didn't do that. But credit to Alma.
Yeah, it was a proper sort of, you felt proud that Alma played for the Devils when it happened. And yeah, it was. And, I think waited for the penalty, and it was straight after he helped Mosey off the ice. I think he saw the state of his eye. Photos being shared on social media from when he arrived back in the rink on Sunday, and it's obviously not a pretty sight. And yeah, he just decided that something had to be done about it, and credit to him for that. I struggle to say not credit for the rest, but somehow from a hit that has, since resulted in a 6-game ban for Rislin, and a 3-game ban for Ulmer, admittedly, the Devils end up on a 2-minute power play, a 2-minute penalty kill. As Aaron said, Mosey's in a position, great chance to score. He's taken out with what is an illegal hit. You then lose him for the rest of the game. You then lose your third line centre, who is in tons of form for the rest of the game. And not only that, you've got a face-off down the other end of the ice and you're killing. It's a hell of a swing of momentum there, Sean.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult because hits like that, like Aaron said, it's one of the quickest hits he's seen. And should one of the officials have seen it? Yes, but... I thought it was clean from my viewpoint. I know it was a little bit high up, but if the referee stood our side of the play, from the angle, it looks clean to him. The linesman, if the linesman is on the same side as that end of the ice,
there's four officials. They can't all be on the same bit of the ice.
There are four officials there. I get that, but they do only get one look at it, and. I agree that, it sucks. We should know it. We should never, ever have been on the kill at the end of that. But, these things happen. It is a massive momentum swing. And if it's done correctly and Rizlin gets 5-plus game and we end up with a 5-minute power play on that for whatever reason, then you argue that the result of that game is different. But,
I don't know. It is what it is. The swing from one to the other is massive. As we said, that we had the same on Wednesday with the penalty against John Armstrong, that was probably a bit harsh.
Swings and roundabouts, isn't it? You get some, you win some, and every team has it, and
Oh yeah, just sort of talking about it as it,
yeah,
as it happens. Your Devils do manage to kill the penalty, but a couple of minutes later, that's the moment that Aaron was waiting for. Luke Pither gets his customary goal. And 2-1, and that's the game. No points from Nottingham this year, and sort of came back with a suspension over a player and, you know, a potential injury. I know a few fans, myself included, saw Evan Mosey when he arrived back to the rink on Sunday. It was nice to see him walking around, you know, talking to people, posing for photos. So, you know, obviously we know from the Tyson Marsh incident a few years back that the club will take care of him. You know, but it was great to see that, you know, the day after he was, you know, well enough to be walking around on his own, and, you know, he seemed in good spirits as well. So, you know, obviously hope that he's better soon, both, you know, for him personally and to get him back on the ice, because he is playing really well. Well, it's a bit underwhelming, but he's playing really well at the moment. we'd almost made it through two games that Evan Mosey was mentioning it. Devils were due to travel up to on Sunday. I think on the bus on the way home from Nottingham, a few of us had been told that Fife's ferry home on Saturday night had been cancelled, so they booked a hotel, booked themselves on the morning ferry, and face-off was due. And then that ferry was cancelled. So face-off got pushed back till 7:30. And then about a half hour later, the game was cancelled. So I was in the Devils office selling tickets. One of the reasons for the delay for anyone that was stuck in the queue was that Todd was doing a lot of work dealing with a cancelled game as well. So, yeah, it all just, you know, came through very last minute. Now, Fife had a doubleheader in Belfast, and obviously their travel plans would have been disrupted anyway. But we've discussed how the Devils look tired in both. Aaron, in your opinion, you know, is it better overall that it was cancelled, or do you think that, you know, Fife after 2-2 was still an opportunity that you would like us to have taken?
I 100% think that I am very glad that the game was cancelled. We was on tired legs. I'm not sure how the review process would have gone if
it would have been done before the Fife game.
Exactly. So then if it is done, then you're missing Ulmer for that game already. You're missing Mosey, because I 100% guarantee you Mosey wouldn't have been able to travel. Well, he didn't. He stayed in that hospital, I think, or something like that I seen somewhere on Twitter. But so that we would have been down two guys with an already tired
And dad.
What's that, sorry?
And obviously her dad wouldn't have been
with the team. Obviously, yeah, if her dad was close to fit, you know, he was willing to play, I don't think he would have been able to make it if I had to play. And I'm just glad that it was cancelled, because it would have been a room full of tired guys, low on energy, low on confidence because of the loss the night before. So, you know, it's an extra day's rest ready for this weekend. Hopefully we can get a couple of guys feeling better, back to fitness, and, you know, try and grab those 4 points over the weekend.
Sean, do you agree with that?
No, I would have liked that game then. I know we were tired. Fife would have been tired as well, especially with the disruption of the travel. They probably would have been less ready to play than we were. You look at the schedule we've got coming up. Fife is going to be a tough game that we have to add into an already busy schedule going down the stretch in our title chase. And I think I would have liked to have get it done and over with.
You say busy schedule. We've now played the exact, without that Fife game, we've played the same number of games as Belfast.
Yeah, I know. But
second leg to fit in.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, we look at when we have to reschedule this game in. Is it going to be, you know, who's to say it wouldn't be the Tuesday before the Belfast doubleheader? Or, you know, in the middle of when we've got another big game, you know, it's going to impact on that Fife game as well as the follow-on game that comes with it. So, you know, if we had lost that game then, it's maybe not the end of the world. If you, you know, go there and win it and then lose to another team as a result of the overtiredness, who knows? I would have liked it there and then. We weren't in great shape. Fife weren't in great shape. But I still feel that the quality would have been in our favour to go and take the victory. And I think that maybe, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think that might be a game that we look back and wish we played on later in the year.
I was 50-50. I probably would have sided a little bit more with Aaron, but can definitely see both sides.
That happened often, Christ.
Yeah, I know. Pop it in your calendars. Paul just about agreed with Aaron. I didn't say I fully agreed with you. I had to keep it believable. Mention the Devils are now level on games. Fife didn't put much of a fight up in Belfast. Belfast won both those and then won in Milton Keynes. And have closed the gap back down to 5 points. So heading into February, 5 point gap between us and Belfast. It's exactly the same in terms of now the games in hand have gone, but it feels a lot different to the 11 points. Well, no, it's not. We lost a game. We were talking about 11 point gap last week. We're now at 5 points. So it's, it's
all to play for.
All to play for. That is the term we were looking for. So before we discuss the outcome of the bans, just quickly, let's do a player of the week. Aaron, who I think I might know who's going to get your vote.
I think it's quite obvious, isn't it? I'm going to vote for Elmer. I'm not going to talk about him too much because I've done it earlier. But
we've had a 10-minute Elmer monologue. Let's not get over it.
He had a 3-point game against Sheffield. You know, assisted the game winner, and then the antics he put up for sticking up for his teammate on Saturday. To be honest, even if he didn't grab a point, he would have had my man in the match for that. So, yeah, it's Ulmer for me, boys.
It would have been Ulmer for me, even if he'd have had a 0-point game in Sheffield. But he's absolutely cemented it by being probably man of the match in that game and then doing that on Saturday. Sean?
Yeah, can't disagree. Probably man of the match on the Wednesday game, as you both said, and you know, just a real, real leader, stood up for his teammates and just a real veteran presence that in that stage of the game, of this season, that's a real message to, I think we have to use that as a message. You know, you take out one of our star players and regardless of whether we're going to get beaten up, someone's going to come for you. I'd like it to not be someone of Lane Elmer. I would have much rather it be Batch, Lewis, you know, A another. But Elmer is the one willing to step up, and massive, massive kudos to him for it. So, yeah, it's got to be Lane Elmer for me. We just have a unanimous player of the week.
Excellent. First time in a while. Congratulations to Lane Elmer. Let's keep the Elmer show rolling on, though, just quickly with the announcement of the bans. Can't remember if I said how many. Jane and Risen got a 6-game ban for the hit to the head. It was classed as reckless on the DOPS review. And he's classed as a repeat offender, having already set a ban for a hit to the head this season. And Lane Elmer got a 3-game ban for leaving the bench. Interestingly, before our game on Saturday, Ryan Finnerty has tweeted DOPS asking why 3 games for Elmer, but 5 for a Storm player that left the bench, and what the difference in the two scenarios is. I would probably hazard a guess that Elmer helped carry off the injured player beforehand, might have given a little bit of mitigation, but I don't know. Sean, for you, DOPS get those bans right? Risen and Elmer's?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, didn't Cole Shudra get a 3-game ban for exactly the same thing this year?
Yeah, I think it was 3 that Shudra got, yeah.
It was the TV game, wasn't it? Yeah. And
where Shudra was winding up his goalie, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. Yeah, so Shudra was 3. Elmer, yeah, it's the right play. I know he has obviously he has the fight afterwards, but I think the DOPS review says that they can understand why someone got involved, but they could have been done at any other stage, you know, during the night, and that's why he got his penalty for leaving the bench and getting involved in an altercation. So, yeah, spot on from DOPS there. Risling, 6, yeah, I think probably fair. I think on another day you would have given him 3, 4. Class him as a repeat offender, and that's, you know, a couple added on, or if you're looking at 3, is it doubled for a repeat offender? We don't know the clarity in the DOPS procedure. I thought that the Panthers statement that came out was quite interesting. Because I think they mentioned that they can't appeal anything under 8 games, and it used to be 5 games from memory, but, you know, I don't understand why the Panthers feel they need to put that out. You know, their owner owns two teams in the league, has two votes. They should be well aware of the rules. I think the difficulty is just that it isn't always passed on to the fans very well. And I think that's something which this year Dobbs maybe hasn't done as much of as it's done in the past, is relay its procedures, anything like that, to the fans. And that's where, you know, fans who, like ourselves, who are very passionate about the game, get a little bit upset about it and a bit annoyed. But listen, the clubs are the ones who have to play by the rules. So as long as they know them, that's all that matters in the long term.
Yeah, and that's probably my biggest take on the Panthers statement, that would have been agreed in a league meeting, and the league is the owners, and like you said, he got two of the teams, so 2/11 of it is that. Interesting, I just, as you mentioned the Kyle Shudra ban, thought I'd see if I could find the Dobbs story. And he got suspended for 5 games in total, with 3 games for leaving the bench and 2 games for the fight that he had, because there was a direct blow to the head of the opposing player, causing an injury. So, if I don't know what the storm incident was, but you know, Dobbs have been quite clear there that it's 3 games for leaving the bench. As Rustin took a 2+10 for the instigator, you know, Ulmer was never going to get a penalty for the way the fight went, because he didn't do very well in it. Aaron, for you, the you know, I'm sure you're not happy at with Ulmer's 3 game ban, but it all seemed fair to you?
Yeah, you can't argue with it really. You know, like, if it, like, imagine that was against us and the player didn't get a ban, we'd all be up in arms. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad and just accept it and move on, really. You know, it's what it is. Got to miss one of our most highest performing players at the moment for 3 games. It sucks, but you know, like, that gives him three games rest, ready to jump back into action and, you know, turn it on and finish the season strong. So it is what it is, really. And Rizlin, you know, if I was me being a Devils fan and very passionate, if I was on the Dobbs, which I shouldn't be anywhere near, I probably would have given Rizlin a EIHL league ban for the rest of his life. And just because of what he did, you know, he didn't meet it, you know, he put himself in a position where it was either make the hit or don't make the hit and get scored on. So he didn't have to lift his arms, I suppose, but it's just so hard. But yeah, I chucked the book at him and be like, you can't play here again. Bye. That's childish.
I do think, just from I don't think any of us have said it, but you know, you've just have that. I don't think it wasn't an intentional.
No,
you know,
no.
He didn't go head hunting. It was just the way the hit landed, I think. But you know, the league's 10 years ago, we'd have all been saying it was a great hit, and you know, the injury's just unfortunate that the game's not there anymore. You know, it's the hitting player's job to make sure they're not making contact with the head. It didn't happen. 6 game ban. We move on, but we will miss Ulmer for this weekend, which we'll come on to, and also the game against Coventry on the 9th of Feb. But before that, we've got a couple of burning questions, and I think the first one probably leads on a little bit from that conversation, Sean.
Yeah, it does. From at Floyd Cleo. After last night in Notts, do we need a Bordalo type enforcer instead of relying on top end D-men, i.e. Hotham and Lewis, to make things right and then lose them for 5+ minutes? Aaron, I'm going to go to you first on this one. What do we miss that enforcer style player when Patrick Bordalo was here? You know, you're at risk of losing your top import defenceman, who are some of your, you look at a guy like Fournier, Hotham, those guys who've been productive over the years. Do we need someone in that enforcer mold to save them doing it, or is it better to have team toughness through the lineup?
Definitely. I don't think you need a player like that, because I think it's just, it doesn't benefit anybody. If they can't play hockey as well as be able to do that role, then, you know, they're just going to end up like they did, like most players do in the NHL. You know, they sit on the bench for 60 odd minutes and play a minute and a half of ice time. You know, it doesn't benefit doesn't benefit the team in any way, shape, or form. I think, you know, it's hard to say that if Mark Lewis wasn't on the ice or, you know, one of there's a number of players on our team that, you know, to be honest, I'm surprised that Joey Martin didn't, because, you know, he's known as a little bit of a nutcase when he sees red. So I was really surprised he didn't. But, you know, it could have been a different story if Mark Lewis was on the ice, because I don't think Mark Lewis would have taken an exception to that. And you've got Batch as well, who, you know, sticks up for his team as well. It's just a matter of, you know, were we waiting, like, was Lord waiting to send someone out to answer the bell when the game restarted? You know, I think Ulmer took upon himself to go after Rislin, and, you know, that's what happened at the end of the day. If the game restarted, he would have lined up Lewis with him, and Lewis would have done it, or Batch, or another forward who was in feeling the same way as Ulmer. It was just the fact that Ulmer took it upon himself to be like, nah, I'm not having that. Come on, drop your gloves. And that's that, really.
I think on my sort of thing, this feels so wrong, but yeah, pretty much agree practically word for word there, which is an absolute miracle.
The best thing is as well, I answered that question without you in it.
Amazing. I can see the concerns with reliance on your D-men to be your enforcer type, fill that role. I don't think Mark Lewis, Josh Batch, they're playing together at the minute. They're our third line D. One of those taking a 5 minutes isn't a massive hit. Usually we've got Evan Mosey now as a seventh D-man. So it's not a massive loss. I think I would rather have two tough guys on defence that can both play than have a tough guy, you know, maybe only one tough guy on defence, and then a tough guy in the forwards who can't play, who doesn't offer as much. We're not lightweight in the forwards. You know, there's not any fighters there, but you look at the way the season's gone. How many fights have we had that haven't just been a spur of the moment? You know, Bryce Reddick has had a couple. You know, the other one, the days of the staged fights and happening. And, you know, say Bordalo type, I think he had, did he have one or two fights in the end?
One against Keith in Belfast and one against Klotz at home.
And a vanity fight against Klotz because he was sad that he got hit on the nose. Yeah. So, you know, and that game was all about him having a fight, and I hate that sort of theatrics with fighting, so...
He had a joking fight with McGrattan as well.
Sorry?
Yeah, didn't he have a joking fight with McGrattan in Nottingham as well?
Oh, they had a hug and fell over, I think. But, yeah, I think they're good friends, so they, you know, it was said that they probably wouldn't fight. I don't care if we've got a tough guy in our forwards or a tough guy in our defence, but, you know, I wouldn't particularly want to sign a specific type of player to do that. Give me a Jamie Livingston any day. You probably won't fight.
Okay, no point. We had another question, which we carried over from last week's show, which is at Devils Hawkins. Lewis Hawkins asks, with fans getting a little heated between each other, what's the best and worst qualities of EIHR fans in general? This coming off the back of, I believe, Devils and Giants fans sniping at each other regarding the Mark Richardson tribute and turning their backs towards it. Paul, best and worst qualities of Elite League fans in general? Go.
I think best is that, and it may be wider than Elite League, it's hockey in Britain at least, but it's the atmosphere. I've stopped going. I used to be a Cardiff City season ticket holder. I very rarely go to watch football now. That the segregation, the animosity, the atmosphere is totally different in hockey. You can wander around a rink with home and away fans mixing, having a chat. You know, the playoff weekend, you know, 11 sets of fans come together. Very rarely do you hear about, you know, you'll always get the odd idiot, especially if people are drinking, but, you know, the fans mix, and I like that. You know, I don't want it to be that we're friendly all the time. You've still got that, you know, so the rivalries but it never crosses, or very, very rarely crosses the line. The abilities are probably totally opposed, because there's two and I can't decide which is worse.
Go ahead, shoot them both.
The one is more of a social media thing in general. The fact that people feel brave enough to just say whatever they want directly at people, and you're 99% of the time, if not more, they never have the balls to say to that person's face. And that is probably wider than ice hockey. And just the fact that Elite League fans want to be offended by everything. So what a Belfast fan turned their back on a Mark Richardson video? Who cares? There was a video for Mark Richardson. Why weren't you watching it? Why do you care what two people did? Maybe for attention. Maybe just because they were bored. Maybe because they were talking to the person behind them. Why does it matter? And anything that happens, oh, they can't say, they say that on it. Oh, and it'll upset the players. You can't criticise a player. You criticise players all you want. We pay money to watch them. Don't tag them in it. Don't be a dick. But you haven't got to be to their defence. They're not this. Just get over yourselves. I really struggle reading Twitter sometimes with everyone.
Long story short, you wouldn't feel aggrieved to abuse Cristiano Ronaldo on Twitter because he's a million miles away and £1 million away, but just because you can meet Joey Martin in a bar afterwards, you're not allowed to say anything negative about him.
That seems to be
the basis of what you're trying to say. Anything yourself?
I can't say nothing because I fall into that category. You know, I'm a very passionate fan, which I find something great about Elite League fans, and I'm also I'm also a fan that you know, I will share my opinions on players, the way the team plays, things like that. I will share my opinion, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think when you put yourself forward to play a pro sport, and you know, you get watched by thousands of people a week, I think you leave yourself open and vulnerable to be criticised. It happens in all sports all over the world, and I think just because the hockey community is maybe a smaller community, that, you know, the people will take offence. You know, you got some, like, if someone called one of my favourite players over, you'll probably see me defend them. But, you know, it's just, I feel like if it's your social media profile, you should be able to say what you want. All this stuff about not being able to say what if you can't say it to their face, don't say it at all, is, I think, frankly, a load of crap, because I don't see why you'd have to say something on Twitter and then walk up to maybe that player, that coach, that referee, and say that, just a straight up offend them to their face. Like, you know, I find, like, over the internet, you know, it could be taken one or two ways. If you do it to their face, you know, that is like if I went up to, like, Lane Omar and was like, oh my god, why did you fight him? You got battered. You know, he's going to take proper offence to that and probably punch me in the face. But if I say it online, there's going to be other, like, I just think.
Would you tag him in that post? You would say it in general, or would you direct it to him?
No, I wouldn't. Well, no, I wouldn't, because.
Would you say it to us in a conversation, openly, and feel like you were. Yeah, exactly. But if Lane Omar was stood in the same place,
you're not gonna
direct that to him.
No, I wouldn't Lane Omar and be like if we was all in the bar, Lane Omar was at the bar, and we was in mid-conversation, we'd be like, oh, hold on, boys, Lane Omar's there, I gotta tell him what I tweeted on Twitter. Do you know what I mean?
I think my point is, I think people, the bit that I've got a problem is when people then do tag him in. You wouldn't go up to him and say it in the bar. But likewise, you wouldn't write a tweet at him to say that. But you're more than welcome to share that opinion because you're a paying fan.
Yeah. And I think, like, there's a couple of situations with a couple of players in the, not just the Devils, but in the league in general, that often reply to fans and things like that and give their opinion on fans and other players and things like that. And I think those kind of people do leave themselves even more open to criticism, because, you know, if you are going to criticize someone for maybe being a little bit argumentative or aggressive, then they're going to criticize you on things that you do wrong. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. As long as you can be, like, civil and be able to discuss the point, I think, you know, you say what you want at the end of the day. Because what also winds me up is, like, people never, like, take, like, football, boxing, MMA. Like, often or not, you will see a pundit, an ex-fighter, an ex-football player, whatever, they will talk down their performance and things like that. And it's never taken badly. So what, I don't see why a fan can't do that. Do you know what I mean? It's just an opinion on what you think. Whether it's fact or false, it's just your opinion at the end of the day. And some people will take that seriously and take it to heart, and other people won't. But I think, you know, if you don't like what you're seeing, there's a mute button on Twitter, there's a block button on Twitter, use them. Simple as.
Fair enough. But anything, Aaron, specifically about Elite League fans that you find positive or negative? All on the Elite League. Is there any good in the Elite League fan base?
Of course it is. you know, we are probably most, like, in all seriously, like, some football fans, yeah, they are great, but, you know, I'll take just the Cardiff Devils fan base. I'll take. I don't know many more passionate fans. You know, there's week in, week out, there's fans that go to both home and away games. You know, we organise trips. Belfast, there's, you know, we often go to Scotland if there's a double header. You know, most the fan bases in the Elite League are just so passionate, and they all love their clubs with everything. And, you know, I think that's my favourite thing about ice hockey, not ice hockey, but the fan bases, is the fact that we are so all passionate and would do anything for the club, travel anyway. Whether we were great, which we are now, or like 4 years ago when we were terrible, you know, how many fans still bought a season ticket the next season not knowing what was going to happen, do you know? So, yeah, it's just the passion and the love for the sport, because, you know, our on-ice product isn't as great as some leagues in the world, and we all know that, but we still love it and treat it as if it was our second child or first child or whatever. You know, I love hockey with all my heart, and I've only been a fan for 4 years. Do you know what I mean? So it's just, honestly, that's my favourite thing, is the passion.
Fair enough. Sean, anything else from you that is positive or negative?
Yeah, the negatives, you know, like yourselves, but I think you can say, like you say, Paul, that that applies to most things in life, not just ice hockey. But I think the positive for me, when you look at it from all the fan bases, is how they group together when, you know, when things are tough. You look at Sheffield with you know, raising funds for when Amy Usher was ill. Belfast raising funds for Bleed Teal for Tom and Blake's Wheels, the Devils with Scott Matska and Scarlet's Army, all this sort of thing. And the fact the fan base is grouped together when times are tough, and the Elite League is something that you just have to look sometimes at the fan bases all around the league, and there's no exception. Everyone buys in, and in the long run, it's probably the fact that I think every hockey fan can appreciate that there is more than the game. And put rivalries aside when it matters. And obviously that's been needed it's been needed regularly the last couple of years, but that's one thing which sticks in my mind, is how well that the community of fans, referees, players, management all group together when they need to. For the betterment of other people, and yeah, that's my positive when you look at the fans around the league.
Yeah, hard to disagree with that one as well. So thank you to Lewis and Floyd for the questions. If anyone's got anything you want us to discuss on next week's show, please get them sent in, #burningquestion, And you're Ramite. You can tell we lost on the weekend because we didn't come out and ask for any. But what do you love, what do you hate? Hashtag Ramite. Let us know. We'll read them out next week. Very quickly before we go, though, we've got two games coming up, and we're going to be missing Lane Olmer, and we're probably going to be missing Evan Mosey, and nobody seems to know if we're going to be missing Joey Haddad. So a tough weekend potentially on the cards. And first up, Aaron, is a trip to Manchester, a team that have been in some good form at the moment, and always a difficult place to go as well. What are your thoughts on the game?
You know, they're not a bunch of pushovers. They play well. They're in their own rink, and we know, whereas like 2 years ago when teams had to come here, we often made it difficult for teams to play against us. We use the surface and boards to our strength. It's going to be a difficult game. You know, hopefully we'll have a couple of fresh legs with the long break we've had. Maybe a couple of sickness bugs disappear. I'm expecting a bounce back after the Nottingham game. I'm not expecting to blow Manchester away. It's going to be a tight game. They're still in. I'm not sure where they are in the league, to be honest. They're a good team. They're probably bouncing around. Yeah, you know, they're still fighting for a playoff place. It's going to be a tough. It's games that they need to win. It's a game that we need to win. It's just whoever's going to be the better team to come up on the other side, really. I'm full of confidence that we will get the points. It's just start well and don't drop off and let them get into the game, and we should be fine. So, yeah, I'm expecting a W. 2 points. Bring them home, lads. Come on.
Yeah, Sean, you said it's a tough place. Aaron said, I think Manchester are tied up with points on Sheffield now. In 8th, 9th spot, but over the last 10 games, they're the third best team in the league, having only dropped 5 points in that time. So, never an easy place to go. Are you concerned for the game? You're especially likely going in a couple of bodies short.
I think that's a place where you don't want to be going and playing short bench with the style of game that they play. I missed the last trip, but I think on the two trips in league action this year, Gleeson Fournier scored 2 goals in each one. So I'm expecting at least a hat trick in this one from him. Which I think this year has been our best in Manchester in terms of just not just the results, but the way that we've played there as well. We've chipped pucks in, taken shots from any sort of angles, and hoped to drive rebounds or get the puck on net. And I feel like we've really adapted our game plan to win there, and Bouncy's been big in games that we've played up there. It's going to be a tough one. It always is. Like you said, they're on a pretty good run, on a rush for a playoff spot. And I'm fairly confident. Why not? It's a place where not many teams will enjoy going this year, but we've already got 4 points out of there. Let's make it a clean sweep.
Yes, do indeed. And Fournier has not only scored 2 goals in both of the last games in Manchester, he scored the first 2 and both in the first period. So,
two-nil. If he doesn't score in the first period, then we're knackered, basically.
We don't know what's going to happen. We're in uncharted territory. Who knows what's going to happen? Sheffield are the visitors then on Sunday. You're hot on the heels of our game there on Wednesday. Aaron, you're hoping for a bit more of a comfortable game than, you know, now that getting them back on home ice in Cardiff?
Yeah, I think it's the other side of that swing now, where Sheffield played 2 tough games last weekend, played a midweek game, and they got to come to us with a little bit tired legs. And yeah, I think, you know, they don't offer much threat going forward. You know, they're pretty good at getting the puck and collapsing, boxing out. Whistle, if he's on his game, he's a good goalie. So I think we just need to start early, but keep the pressure up. You know, high forecheck, get a couple of goals banged in, and make it feel like we're not missing any players, because, you know, it's going to be a high energy game. We're going to be chasing a lot of puck, and it's going to be a difficult one, but we're at home. It's been a while since we would have played at home as well. You know, we didn't play last week. We're not playing Saturday, so it's our first home game in a bit of a stretch. If a crowd can get into it like they did against the Belfast, then, you know, it'll be easy for them, because, you know, that we should give them, be the, as the cliche goes, the sixth man on the ice. That should be another easy win, but, you know, I said that last time and we just about scraped it, so don't take my word for it.
Aaron mentioned the crowd, Sean. Devils announced today there's, I think, under 250 tickets remaining. So the potential for a big atmosphere. The Sheffield games, other than this week, have been a bit of a blowout. So obviously flatter atmosphere, but you know, getting to the business end of the season, you'd like to think the crowd will be up for it, and you know, think that'll run through into the team.
Yeah, and I'd like to think so. It's obviously a difficult game the night before. As Aaron said, it's the first time hockey's been at the arena for a couple of weeks. And, you know, that doubleheader against Belfast was the last time that we saw the team. And off the back of it, the crowds were very, very good, very loud, passionate. So maybe there'll be a little bit of a blip to get ourselves back into it and pick the momentum back up. But, yeah, I'd like to think so. And there's no better team normally to get that atmosphere with than the Steelers. They're obviously on a bit of a dip, but they played a good game against us midweek, and I think they're going to come out. They're really, really desperate to make the playoffs. It's desperate hockey for Sheffield. They need to put a bit of a run together and at least consolidate a playoff spot and try and not leave it till too late in the season to just about sneak in there.
Yeah, picked up a win over Guildford as we've been recording tonight as well. So that's it, yeah. Hope that's their win for the week. If they just win one a week for the rest of the year, they'll be all right. So they should have Sunday off. My thoughts, I'm quite nervous with, you know, players out, teams fighting for eighth spot. There's no easy games is the cliche. But it's not a great run, not a great set of opponents for us to be missing these players. So, you know, hopefully the team will dig deep. Ulmer laying his body on the line, you know, Mosey's injury. May just galvanise the team as well. And, you know, if anyone is playing a little bit hurt, might just give them that little spur on. Hopefully, we'll see a big reaction this weekend. That's what I want to see. And I think to be expected. I'm hoping for that. That is everything we're covering this week. As I said, please do get your burning questions and your Almite suggestions into us through the week. Thank you for listening. Share your thoughts with us as well. If you listen to the show, if you agree with us, if you disagree with us, drop us a tweet. We're always happy for a debate if we disagree, or we'll wait till the show where you haven't got a right reply. One or the other. But thank you for listening again. And for now, that is your Red Army Roundup. Devil inside, the devil inside. Every single one of us, the devil inside.